Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through, Episode 33, Things Bad Begun, Sleigh Ride Review.
Welcome to Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through, a fan podcast dedicated to Fear the Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of Fear the Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278 or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts, Brian and Ruthie.
Hey, survivors, welcome to another fine episode of Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
And I'm Kyle.
And I'm Ruthie. I'm not.
You want to welcome our guest?
Yeah, she's no stranger to this podcast, and she is a multi-showcase winner. And you get a built-in showcase win for tonight. And of course, you have a lifetime supply of at this point. Laura.
Okay.
Greetings and salutations.
Welcome.
How are you doing? It's a pleasure to have you join us for the finale.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
Oh, well, you know, you've been an outstanding contributor this season. In fact, you know, pretty much the for the last, I'd say at least two seasons, maybe even longer than that. We're pleased to have you on, and I think this is going to be
a fun
couple of episodes to talk about. So
welcome.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. We'll see how I do as I get lower and lower on my, you know, noir here.
So, just a little bit about, you know, yourself, not that you're going to be, doing this from now on, but, you know, just to all the listeners out there, I know you're in the Denver area, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mile High City.
Nice.
And I know that you listen to a lot of other Walking Dead podcasts. In fact, we belong to a Facebook group of at least one of them together. Mm-hmm. So, like, who else do you, who besides us? You know, I don't want to say that we're your fave, but we have to be up there at least. So, but. Who else do you have heavy on your rotation?
Listen to the Walking Dead cast, of course.
Yeah.
Actually, that was my very first podcast. It was my first foray into podcasts. And, I think sometimes I listen to the Walking Dead girl because it's a father-daughter situation. They're really cute together. They have a fun dynamic because, you know, Dad's there with his daughter. What else am I listening to? I think just this past couple of episodes, I've listened to the Nth cast. I don't know. There weren't very many other Fear the Walking Dead casts, so I was looking for a few of those just to see who was out there. And I do listen to the Walker Stalkers sometimes, just because they're like the day after. So,
yeah,
there's some sort of immediate feedback that I like to listen to.
Yeah, although they stopped covering Fear, which
I know.
Yeah, that sucks. But
lesser for them because this was a good season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah, and speaking of a good season, we have a good season finale that we're talking about tonight. So we are here to talk through season 3, episode 15, which is titled Things Bad Begun. And that is written by Jamie O'Brien and directed by Andrew Bernstein. And then we also have, also directed by Andrew Bernstein, is season 3, episode 16, which is titled The Very Trippy Sleigh Ride. written by the showrunner and departing showrunner, executive producer Dave Erickson, and Mark Richard, who is another co-executive producer. All right. So what the hell is happening?
What the hell is happening?
I have no idea.
And first, we have some errata of a personal nature. Specifically, it's kind of funny because last week I kept on saying during the episode, I can't decide what to rate this. I'm going to rate it at the end. And then I never did. So last week, I'm going to give it a 9. And I said in the episode, I said it's somewhere between an 8 and a 10. So 9 seemed to be right in the middle. 9, a deeply troubled adolescence. And specifically, I'm talking about the drug trip. Or, in honor of Ophelia, 9 sadly missed reunions.
Aww.
All right. So now we get to discuss ratings. So I was a little disappointed to see the ratings this week. They were not as good as I thought they would be. Fear the Walking Dead got 0.80 in the 18 to 49 coveted demographic with 2.230 million viewers. Now, that is up in the demographic from last week's 0.77 in the 18 to 49, but it is ever so slightly down, literally 1,000 people, 2.231 million viewers. So does that work? Is that right? 230,000, yeah, I guess it would be.
Yeah.
Exactly 1,000 less people watched the show.
Outside of the 18-year-old and the 49-year-old, so.
Yeah, well, the total viewers, that's everybody. That's like, you know, 93-year-old, you know, grannies and, you know, 7-year-olds and, you know, everything in between. So Talking Dead actually was lower. Now, it was slightly lower, but it aired at 11 p.m. instead of 10 p.m. It got a 0.29 in the 18 to 49 with 870,000 viewers, and that is versus a 0.30 in the 18 to 49 with 953,000 viewers last week. All right. Well, couple of things. This first thing is a continuation of last week's news about the crossover, which I think we'll probably talk a little bit about that later because I want to get your take on it, Lara. Actually, in the Hollywood Reporter, Dave Erickson was asked about it, and he said, and I made my title when I posted this to the Facebook group, Crossover Schmossover. He said, and I won't read you the entire thing, but just a portion of what he said. He said, I am intrigued to watch as a fan to see how the hell they pull it off. By design, you have two shows that are hopefully very different totally. That was the intention coming out of the gate. It'll be interesting. I'm sure they have a plan, he continues. He says, I'm sure they have a plan locked in because I think they'll start shooting soon. I wouldn't say I'm disappointed not to be part of it because I think there's ample story in the Fear world to sustain the show without having to cross over, but it should be interesting. So like the title that we saw, you know, passed around the web was that, you know, he didn't think that the show needed a crossover. And I would tend to agree. So what do you guys think?
I mean, I don't think it needs a crossover, but since it seems like they're moving towards basically Gimple having some kind of, you know, influence on it, and then two new showrunners, I think they're starting to look, or at least maybe it's AMC starting to look at, you know, like both shows, they want to somehow tie them in together to, you know, make a little more hype or more ratings, more whatever.
So he's diplomatically saying, no, bad idea. I don't like it. I think it sounds like a marketing ploy to me, but I guess, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I think a lot of, maybe we should talk about it now. Because, I mean, it has, first of all, I should say that I was surprised to hear a little thing from Gimple on Talking Dead about it. Because I didn't expect that. And that kind of suggests to me that Gimple is more heavily involved in the show than I thought he was going to be, you know?
This seems very AMC, if you ask me.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. I mean, I think that, you know, the show has dropped, you know, in the ratings, and you know, quite honestly, especially I think this season has been fantastic.
Yeah.
And more people deserve to be watching the show. So for it to, you know, decline in viewers the way that it has, it's probably, you know, disappointing for them. And, you know, they're going to try something to, you know, kickstart it a little bit. But, I mean, the show deserves more people watching it. You know, it's unfortunate that a lot of people gave up and just don't seem to be willing to come back to it.
Yeah, maybe they gave it two seasons and they said, nah, that's it. And they don't realize how good this season was and how different it was.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, you know, that's the good question. Fear is not on Netflix, or, you know, it's like, I don't even think you can necessarily see it online.
It's on Hulu.
It's on Hulu.
Oh, it's on Hulu. Okay. See, I just kept all my DVR recordings. So, but I only have Netflix. So, and cable.
But you know, I don't think AMC did it any favors, because before the midseason began, they didn't run a marathon of it. I think they were running a marathon of The Walking Dead, and so people weren't able to catch up before the midseason premiere began, and it wasn't on Hulu. And I went to the AMC app trying to download some of, or to watch some of the earlier episodes. And until just today, I think they didn't have the earlier ones available. They had just the most recent one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, well, they still are holding the parent show as their pride and joy. So, and that's a misstep though. They should have just had it all available, you know, like just easy access.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it has every right to be, you know, the you know, crown jewel of the network, The Walking Dead does. But, you know, I think with some additional love, I think this show could, you know, definitely be a strong number two. And I think it might still be a number two, although that sounds terrible. Yeah, I don't want to step in number two anyway. But I don't know if it's still the second highest rated show on the network. Actually, the second highest rated show on the network is Talking Dead, but the second highest rated drama, I guess you could say. So you know, it's to be seen if it can be. I think that with enough love, they could definitely increase ratings. I don't think it being on Hulu is, I think you're right. I mean, if it was on Netflix, I think it would have the possibility of getting more viewers, because I don't know how many people subscribe to Hulu, but I think in streaming, it's probably number three behind Amazon and Netflix.
Yeah, no, you know? That's true. And, you know, then at the same time, it's like, you know, they could also have had it on their website to where you could access it, you know, and, you know, maybe if, as long as you had a cable, you know, so however you wanted to do the paywall, or, you know, no one paying for it, but like if you wanted to have some kind of block, or just be like, hey, this is the, you know, crossover, you know, you can only get it at amctv.com. You know, that would have worked.
Yeah. Yeah, and they have this, I know if you have Comcast, they have this service that you can get like a bunch of stuff on their site, but it's like $5 a month additional, and it's only for Comcast subscribers, which is really weird. So I don't know if they're going to roll that out, you know, further. All right, next on the news, and it's time for another webisode series. So during the season of The Walking Dead, they are going to show a digital series called The Walking Dead Red Machete. And it says, digital series follows the weapon Rick uses to kill Gareth. Follow the path of the red-handled weapon from its innocent beginnings as it lands in the hands of survivors good and evil, familiar and new. New installments begin Sunday, October 22nd on AMC apps for mobile and devices and AMC.com. So, obviously, it's going to be another one of those webisodes where they play like 30 seconds at a time. And it's probably going to be something like, you know, Fear the Walking Dead, or sorry, not Fear the Walking Dead, The Walking Dead Red Machete, brought to you by Red Bull.
Red Bull gives you wings.
You know, or Red, what's it, Red Baron, or what's the Red
Baron Pizza?
Yeah, Red Baron Pizza, or Red Robin, you know.
No, and this is interesting, because didn't David Erickson talk about how he really liked doing like webisodes, or he wanted to have more of those to incorporate different parts of the world or whatever?
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know if he's going to be a part of that or not.
I don't think so. I mean, yeah. I know that he has another, he has a series in development at AMC, but he also signed a development deal with, is it Sony? So, like, I think future things that he's developing would be, you know, Sony, and you know, Sony doesn't have a network, but like a lot of programs that are out there come from Sony, including like stuff like Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, and you know, several. Other shows that appear, you know, on AMC and other networks.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, good for him, I would say. But, yeah, I mean, well, we'll get to in a second here. Actually, very soon we'll talk about this. But, yeah, I think in many ways with him, you know, signing elsewhere, I think they're kind of missing out. But we'll see how this show that he's got in development, you know, turns out for AMC. All right. Well, anyway, we are going to give our ratings now. So, Kyle, what did you, and I guess we're going to rate them together. So what did you think? Things Bad Begun and Sleigh Ride.
I gave it a 9.8. Boom Goes the Dynamite, or C4.
I don't have a boom.
thing. Boom. I don't either.
But the only thing I can use for that would be,
it's a trap.
Yeah, I don't see anything that would work. Anyway, what'd you give it, Lara?
I gave it a 10 out of 10 cart full of brains.
Yeah, that was interesting, wasn't it? And for that matter, it explains the description of the previous episode where it said that he was profiting.
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah, that didn't make sense.
It didn't until this one. Yeah, I don't know if they, like, moved the story around or something, and that was originally going to be part of last episode or what. I don't know, but it finally was explained here. All right, well, I'm going to give it a slightly lower rating, but not much lower. 9.75. Sure, we're okay, until I bonk you with a ball-peen hammer. And of course, I'm talking about Madison and Troy, but I could also give it to 9.75 Jeremiah Turkey Heads. Because if anyone is a turkey, it's Jeremiah. So I thought that was quite fitting. And to that, I will say that I was worried, since, you know, Erickson is leaving the show. You know, if you remember, you know, several years back now when Glenn Mazera left, you know, the first half of the third season was amazing. I think most people would say, and, you know, even into much of the, you know, second half, but the ending, you know, that finale was such a disappointment that when that came, people were like, oh, I see why he's gone.
He messed it all up.
You know, and you know, Gimple had to spend like a half season the next season trying to fix things up because of, you know, what he did and with the governor and all of that stuff. But I think Erickson stuck the landing, and for the, I'm kind of disappointed now that he's gone, because this was an amazing season and an amazing ending to it.
Totally was. Like, it was like night and day what we got from season 2 and 1 to like the start of this to, I mean, you know, to the end. It really, really was good. He did an awesome job.
I mean,
I think he was finally free of the AMC shackles, and he's like, I'm going to do what I want to do. And it was really good.
Yeah. And, you know, the changes that he made this season, I think really improved the show, and, you know, bringing in the ranch and the autos and, you know, our character that we love to hate or even love to love, Troy, which I'm kind of sad to see him go, actually.
I love him. I'm going to say it. I don't care if I get hate. I'm going to be the advocate for all Troy fans.
All right. Well, we got a couple other listener ratings. So you want to do PB and Zane's rating?
Yep, I will do that. PB and Zane, she says, things bad begun. It was a good episode, and I give it an 8.5 bad guys make googly eyes at Alicia. Sleigh ride, I rate this one 9.0. Nick says detonate. That was funny. I think I'll skip Christmas dinner this year. Yuck.
Dieta said, I rate this episode 9 out of 10. Troy is dead. Finally.
Yeah, she was very wanting. I mean, I kind of felt the same way, but
that hurts my heart, Dieta. But I get you.
All right, it is time for awesome sauce. All right, well, we have some listener awesome sauce. So first is from Cutter. He says, the awesome sauce of the season. Really love Walker and Crazy Dog playing their part at the end here. Nice last minute save.
And PB and Zane, she says, I don't have any awesome sauce or weak sauce for that one, which she's talking about Things Bad Begun. But she has awesome sauce for Sleigh Ride, and then Troy gets it, and the little bit of Travis. I kind of like the Proctor John dude, a bit weird, but I liked him anyways. But who gets up and goes to town after spinal surgery?
Proctor John does.
I know.
Yeah. And Dieta, she says, awesome sauce was Nick with the detonator. I will hit the kill switch and blow us all away. Also, Walker and Crazy Dog playing sniper trying to save Dick. Yeah, I actually like that too. There was, you know, and I know that they had identified Crazy Dog as a sniper. Well, we finally got to see that this week. So,
and it was cool because it was, to me, that caught me off guard. I didn't catch it when they, you know, when they left, they did, like, I guess they were talking to Madison. They did leave and say, like, oh, we're going to go up north, but as we're up there, we'll scout the road and, you know, come back if we see anything. But that totally, I didn't catch that until I kind of skipped through it the second watch. So, I mean, I was not expecting it. And then the next thing you know, I was like, oh, man, you know, Nick's like in so much trouble. Like, he's got all these guns pointed. And then it was like, boom. So I was kind of cheering. I was like, yes.
Yeah. All right. It's now time for our awesome sauce. So, Kyle, you want to start?
Sure. Yeah, my awesome sauce. I mean, overall, it was kind of like, overall, I enjoyed the episode, but I don't know, it was like towards the end, I guess, whenever it was, you know, there was just so much going on, you know, them at the dam. But it's like, at the end, like, Madison floating in the water at the very, very end, that whole scene, like, I don't know, it was just, like, they've had these moments in the show where it's just, like, visually stunning. Like, it looked like she was just floating in, like, some weird kind of clouds, and there was, you know, debris and stuff flying by her, but it was just very, you know, I don't know, like, heavenly, because you thought, you know, she's, like, she's dying or going to drown. But it's just the whole way they presented it was, like, I don't know, it was very visually, you know, cool. And then, like, the dam loading up with the water, you know, rushing through it, and I didn't, like, you know, after it busted open and it started coming in, but there was like a point I didn't catch it, and I just heard about it online and then I went back to rewatch it. But like, there's Troy's dead body and the water's rushing in and stuff. Like, I don't know, there was just some really cool moments in that just little segment at the end that I really liked.
Yeah. To that end, Troy, I kept thinking all the way, you know, through the episode that he was going to come back.
Yeah.
You know, like that, you know, cause you see him, and I didn't think that he was dead. I thought he was like, you know, knocked out or something. Like, well, he was knocked out, I guess, but not as knocked out as he actually was. So I kept on expecting to see him, you know, show up again. Like one of the characters in Die Hard that you think is dead, you know, at the end,
comes.
Shows up. I was expecting that kind of thing, and it didn't happen. So
I figured he was dead when I saw the leaking brain matter coming out of the side of his temple.
See, I didn't see the leaking brain matter. Either, you know, I saw blood, but I didn't see brain matter.
Ooh.
So anyway, I was expecting to see him come back, and when that they showed, you know, the water, you know, washing him away, I was like, oh, wow, that's cool. So, and it did make me smile as well. all right, Laura, what you got?
Well, my sauce is rich with awesomeness because I love this episode so much. I'll just give quick hits and then expand on them in feedback, but fresh developments in the Walking Dead mythos, surprises throughout the episode, new menacing antagonists, brutal, unexpected, not projected deaths, and classic horror elements with the ranch dream scenes and the damn, damn, damn.
I have a special weak sauce jingle for you, Laura.
Oh, no. What is it?
Well, I'm not going to play it yet. It's the element of surprise.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Well, I have to give an awesome sauce to Proctor John. And I think it's Ray McKinnon that played him. I thought that his performance, he was, you know, quiet and deliberate and very scary. I mean, he, in many ways, I think he's a scarier guy than Negan is. And I don't know if he's going to be a part of the show. They didn't actually, you know, show him die here. So I think it would be really cool if he ends up being a baddie next season.
I agree. I think he's way more menacing than Negan.
Yeah. 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 And organized, you know, I mean, he's got a whole thing, you know, a whole system that he's planning to, you know, with all these outposts and things like that. So, you know, he's definitely a bad guy that is interesting and someone I'm hoping we get to see more of.
Yeah, and I'll get to it later. Like I didn't give him really a chance at first, and it's mainly because it was from my first instinct or just my first reaction to him. But I don't know if rewatching it or later, you know, if later on he is on the show, you know, I'd get more time with him that I might change my mind. But it was just at the first, I kind of was like, okay, like we've already seen some, you know, a character like this, and I kind of just wrote him off without giving him a chance.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah. My other awesome sauces, looks like you guys don't have any more. And if you do, go ahead and say it now. No? Time's up. Okay. I will give another awesome sauce to the confrontations that we saw in these two episodes. The confrontation with Troy and Madison that ended up with the bonk bonk on the head. I thought that was really good. And, you know, we definitely saw that Troy pushed things too far. More on that in a minute, because actually I have something to say about this and the next part, the other confrontation in the weak sauce as well. But the Daniel and Nick confrontation, I especially enjoyed. I enjoyed how, you know, you've got this interrogator, you know, who has it within him to, you know, get extremely evil. And, you know, we've seen some of what he can do, you know, flaying people a la Ramsey Bolton, you know, but you know, the methods of the,
the skills that he has.
So I enjoyed it because, you know, I could see that he, you know, really didn't intend on like getting to that point with Nick, but if he didn't get the kind of answers that, you know, he wanted, he probably would have been pushed to that limit. And I just enjoyed, because Nick, to me, in that situation, I think a lot of other people would have kind of, you know, broke down, and Nick just, you know, kept his composure and, you know, actually, you know, told him something that, you know, was a lie actually, but told it in such a way that it seemed that Daniel believed him, although we definitely got a little bit of a contradictory tone what Nick said just before Madison did the bonk bonk in the head.
Yeah.
Bonk bonk sounds so endearing, like the little thing you do with your kids, like bonk bonk. I don't think he bonk bonked him.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a Star Trek episode, Miri, I think it was. They kept on saying that, bonk bonk on the head.
Well,
I think smash smash closer to the truth.
Not chomp chomp. That's the wrong one. I'm thinking Mario. No, I think with what you're like, but here's the difference I feel though with Nick and Daniel is Nick's already seen Daniel do this kind of stuff, so I almost like feel though Nick is just not scared of him. You know, it's like he's seen, or he at least knows where, you know, like how far he'll go or maybe how far he can push it. And I don't know. I don't think Nick's scared of him at all. And so
plus Nick's a bit self-destructive. So he doesn't really think about his own self-preservation sometimes.
No, that's very true.
Yeah.
Likes to roll the dice.
All right. Well, and now it is time for the week variety.
You're worthless and weak.
But I will say, Laura, I know that in a lot of your feedback, you like to call it lame sauce. So, very fitting, the bridge between awesome and lame.
That sounds awesome.
No, it's lame. Everything's lame.
Oh, that's awesome.
No, it's
lame.
Yep. I thought of you. I had to get something that had lame on it. So it was perfect, actually, what I found. It's like it has awesome and lame on it. So, all right. Well, Kyle, you want to read the first and it seems like only weak sauce that we got from our listeners from
Yeah. Yeah, and if we did miss anybody's, we apologize. But yeah, I think this is the only one. And Dieta, her weak sauce is Strand with all his wheeling and dealing, which should have got him killed, not Lola and Ephraim, which I kind of agree. Strand was all over the place.
Yeah, what do you think he was, you know, what was the point of what he did? I mean, why did he bring the dam to Proctor John? Like, was Proctor John like already intending on, you know, attacking the place or what?
Yeah, I don't know if he maybe already knew that's what Proctor's like. That's what he was planning on doing. And so he was somehow trying to play the, well, at least maybe I can warn Madison, like everybody, and then try to save them because the situation is going to be bad. So I'll try to wheel and deal some way I can make the outcome, you know, in the, what he was trying to do. I don't know. He seemed throughout the episode, just like almost like hanging by just like his fingernails trying to just control everything, and I don't think it really worked out very well.
I don't think it did either. And I thought it was interesting too how Strand, like when he was trying to get Nick and Madison to just, you know, do what he was saying, he like almost like broke down to say, you know, would you please just do what I'm telling you to do. Almost sound like Captain Kirk. My God! Please!
No.
You need to go a couple octaves lower, though.
Please. My God! Yeah. I can't do a good Strand. I'd have to practice. I probably could if I tried, but... All right. Well, you gave the Dietas, so... Laura! What about your weak sauce this episode? What do you got?
Well, yeah, I thought this was weird, but I enjoyed the episode a lot. So sometimes I give an episode that I really like some goodwill in that, you know, sometimes I hate to be these writers to have to like come up with how's this going to lead to this, and they've only got maybe a few hours to figure this out. But I said to myself, the spinal operation, because it seems like everyone in the apocalypse has these superhuman abilities of recuperation. He just had a foot of his back sliced open, a giant tumor removed and sewn back up, and he's instantly like moving his toes and walking around.
And like, yeah, gets up. I mean, that's like the one thing, and I, you know, I haven't gotten to rewatch it again, but it was like, I didn't see anything really being disinfected or, you know, like it just seemed so just like, okay, let's just try this and hope it all works. And then there was a part where Alicia's like redressing him and it looked so horrible. I'm like, dude, you're going to get an infection and die.
Yeah. I thought of that. I thought that the whole thing about, especially him, you know, he essentially, you know, did the surgery with, you know, minimal amount of, you know, painkillers, you know, obviously he wasn't, you know, put under, and, you know, was able to walk around and everything right after. I mean, that's just crazy. I mean, it's obvious that, you know, not that much time had passed from the time that he got the surgery until then.
20 minutes rest, you're fine.
Although on The Talking Dead, they did say they had like a surgeon on hand to give them some consultation on how the operation would be done. So I don't know. I've never had a spinal tumor removed with local anesthesia only, but who knows? I mean, they did field operations during the Civil War, and then people were like, okay, you're done. Go on your merry way. So maybe we just have a very slow pain threshold in our modern society.
Maybe. Maybe. Okay. Well, oh, that was, in case you heard that was Shorty, by the way. Oh, Shorty is making his presence known over here. Anyway. Okay. Well, I had a few weak sauce, actually, but the first one I'm going to go with is the last one I've got on the list there. It's like, yeah, there is so much traffic out there. I could totally see how, you know, Alicia and what's her name?
Diana.
Diana could have a collision like that. And who were those guys, and you know what happened to them?
It was a something that they, I guess, needed to have, you know, happen, you know, just to move the story along. Because you know, because were those guys part of Proctor's group, or
were they just
other mercenary, you know, other baddies that are just out there trying to survive. So
basic hoodlums.
Yeah. Well, and then it kind of, that's where part of my weak sauce was Diana, you know, I call her my sister Michonne, because then she got hurt. And then throughout, you know, like then Alicia takes her to, I guess, the bullpen, which gets her to the doctor, which then gets her fixed up, and then she's gone. And it was like her character was just like here and there, and like basically, you know, the time of one episode. And, you know, I just don't know. I just felt like her whole character was just kind of a waste of potential. Unless she comes back.
Unless she comes back.
Right.
I'm thinking she'll come back.
And speaking of wasted character that came back, Luciana. We actually got to see her this episode, but I don't know, that whole thing to me weak, because I don't really understand, is she still on the show or what? But
well, you know, I talked about that. We were like, wait, we're gonna like we have to be able to see her, like she's got to be around somewhere. And then hey, there she is, but she's in a dream sequence. So
yeah,
like it means nothing. She was there in spirit
with a zombie baby, it seemed.
Yeah, that's, that's what it seemed like.
All right, Kyle, what else you got?
my other thing, well, and I kind of talked about it, it was like Proctor. I mean, I kind of felt like he was a cheap Negan knockoff, and only because, you know, what we've already have experienced and know because of, you know, such fans of the parent show that, I don't know, it just came off really wrong to me. I didn't like the way he talked. It just seemed like, you know, the whole back surgery, oh, speedy recovery. Oh, yeah, he's the baddie going after, you know, he's going to show up at the dam and cause mayhem. So anyways, I just, you know, maybe I'll, you know, if I spend more time with him, he'll grow on me. You know, I don't want him to kill me. And then my other part was the whole, was Troy getting killed by Madison. I wanted so badly for Daniel to get his revenge, or like, you know, especially when he was there talking with Troy, I felt like Troy's gonna, or not Troy, when he was talking to Nick, like the, you know, that would get out or something, you know, Nick would say something and then he would figure it out and then go and like take his revenge out for, you know, killing, basically killing his daughter, Ophelia. But then I guess Madison called dibs when she said she vouches for him. And then, so it was her responsibility. I don't know. I just didn't like it. I didn't want to see that.
Yeah,
in a way, he was a catalyst, though. Because if they weren't trying, if Nick didn't say that Daniel was going to kill Troy, then she would have never found out.
Mm. True. But I don't know. There could have been other ways to where Daniel could have had that... been able to been the one doing the crack.
Yeah. Well, to that end, my last 2 weeks sauce are related to that. And as far as the interrogation, the thing I didn't understand, you know, okay, Daniel talks to, you know, has the interrogation with Nick. But why didn't he talk to Crazy Dog? No, he talked to Walker, but he never talked to Crazy Dog, who was there with her when she got bitten. So, and he was there. It's not like he wasn't around. He was there. So why was there not a conversation there? Mm-hmm.
That is a good question. And then Crazy Dog would have to say, well, you know, I passed out, couldn't hold her, and made the walker fall on top of her.
Pop, pop. Yeah. Yeah. The other thing regarding that has to do with, you know, so Nick tells Daniel that Jake did it. And as I said before, Daniel seemed to believe him. After, you know, he definitely suspected that Troy did. But then Nick, you know, says to he says to Madison and Troy that Daniel will go after him. And that started the whole thing, you know, where confrontation and, you know, Troy's death. So I mean, does that infer that Daniel didn't believe Nick, or that he would, you know, interrogate Troy once he got a chance to, and would pretty much be able to figure out, you know, after talking to him, that he in fact was the guy? I didn't understand that part of it. You know, why?
I believe the minute that Nick said that Jake did it, he knew he was lying, because if it was a dead man, why wouldn't he just say that first thing? He was holding out so often. It's like, and then he says, well, there were only three people who could do it. You, Troy, or Jake. And the minute he puts the blame on a dead person who can't defend themselves, he knew that Nick was lying and he had his answer.
And it seemed that Daniel knew, and Nick knew that Daniel knew.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, that whole part I think was a bit confusing, and you know, so I liked it. I liked it a lot. I loved it, actually, but there was a little bit of a things. How did Daniel say it? Things turning around in my mind about it.
The one thing I was confused about is why, after like 2 minutes of discussion, he was instantly against Troy. Like, Nick and Troy just came to tell them that the Proctors were coming to attack the dam, and I think he he mentioned something about sitting the CO2 up, and all of a sudden Daniel got really aggressive towards him. I'm like, what did he say that made that kind of tipped Daniel off?
You mean the C4?
Yeah. Oh, this
is
what I say.
CO2.
I am not a good demolitionist. I'm sorry.
I don't think CO2 is flammable.
Yep. Yeah, bomb it with carbon dioxide. Be funny,
that was what confused me. I'm like, how did he get the tip off all of a sudden that he doesn't like this guy? After a couple minutes of discussion.
The way that Troy was acting reminded me of the bros. And their brotasticness. Yeah.
Because he called him brother in Spanish?
The condescending, Spanish that he was using. And it reminded me a lot of those douchebags. So, that was probably part of it. All right. Anyone else with anything else weak?
Nope.
All right. So this is time to listen to Simon.
We can talk about it.
Done talking. Time to listen.
All right. Well, Kyle, why don't you give Cutter's feedback?
Do you want to break this up, or?
Yeah, we experimented with things. I don't know if you picked up on this, Laura, last week, where we kind of we would say a paragraph and then we kind of like follow up on it as we gave the feedback. It kind of seemed to flow better. So
okay.
I think we'll kind of do that this time. So.
Do it.
Chime in if you want to. Okay. All right. Well, Cutter gave us some great feedback. The first part, I'm not sure, he kind of wrote different comments separately. So I'm just going to read them all and then get to the main part of his feedback. But because he was saying, yeah, Madison, he's like finally taking out Troy. And he's like, it's about damn time. And then he said, parentheses more later. And then, well, hell, if Strand hadn't pissed off Daniel before, he definitely has now. And CGI on the water flowing through the hole in the dam was okay. Madison crawls from the flow as the living flock for water.
I thought the whole the water effects were kind of cool, and
I like that ending part with Madison. Just I don't know. It just gave you the sense of okay, here she's dying, or. Some heavenly thing, especially with all her little, dream sequences or whatever you want to call those.
Yeah, very, very trippy dream sequences for sure. All right. Well, Cutter continues. He says, so much to say about this season. By far the best FTWD season to date. Madison got some depth, but still not fond of her. Daniel finding Nick at the end gives me hope that both will return. Strand struggled, and his ways, quote unquote, did nothing but put him in greater and greater danger throughout the season. Troy was a gleeful little psychopath. I remember calling him our little Mengele at the start of the season.
Yeah.
Raining joyful moments of chaos and terror everywhere he went, who finally got what he deserved. From, quote-unquote, mom. Alicia took her time, but has proven to be a true survivor. Daniel has yet to show us all just how dangerous he truly is, and that's pretty scary when you think about it. It is scary, because I just wonder where, exactly where he's going to go. Will he become a really bad character, or... is he just going to be, the one that does the difficult things?
He's lost everything. So there's nothing really holding him back about maybe I should make a different decision. It's almost probably pure survival at this point, and whatever he seems best to get whatever he needs out of it.
Yeah. In a way, he's more dangerous than Troy, because Troy was crazy, but he was off the chain and Daniel's calculating, and you know, he plans these out, and he I guess can see it calculating in his mind. And Ophelia was his moral anchor, and now she's gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. No, I mean, because Troy almost kind of was like just reactionary to things, and Daniel is definitely, he's like, I've already planned out the next like five steps, and that's pretty scary.
All right, why don't you continue?
All right, there were some cheesy bits this season, maybe not so bad as the ambulance off the bridge and onto the track sort of thing, but still pretty bad. The lightning from God, delivering Daniel from the infected, or living through the lack of oxygen in the closed bunker where no one else did, even after a heated battle with several infected, because all that movement would have used up so much oxygen at all, right? And let's not forget the hashtag where's Ophelia for so long, only to have her character still not get much screen time before finally dying just as her father pulls up.
Well, at least when she did show up, you know, although she wasn't like on screen that much, she did certainly make a mark for herself.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, she came on, with a wallop, you know, poisoning everybody.
And taking a beating by Madison.
Yeah.
She got through that. Like,
yeah.
She's a champ.
And it, you know, I was thinking about that. I was going to write in the notes, but since you just mentioned it, it reminded me of when she was talking to Strand, and to a lesser extent when she was talking to Troy. I was thinking of what she was saying to Ophelia that time, where she's like, "What'd you do? What'd you do?" I was almost expecting her to do that again. All right. Well, he continues. He says, "But there were some good things too. Probably the best to date, and definitely the creepiest, was the Raven and the poem." Oh, yeah, that
awesome scene
that disturbed me for a week at least. I kept on replaying it over and over again, and I couldn't get it out of my mind. He says, "We got two former Sons of Anarchy actors in Otto and Proctor John. Anyone who watched Sons of Anarchy knows how funny it is to see Ray McKinnon patched up in a motorcycle club jacket. Both, I thought, were really played well. I think we'll still hear from Proctor John in the future." And I hope so.
Oh, he'll be back.
Yeah.
And it's worth saying that, you know, Kim Dickens was also on Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, right? That's right.
And Deadwood. And so was the guy who played Jeremiah.
Is that a crossover? No. Continue?
Yeah, go ahead.
And he continues to go on. He says, "Lots of death," in parentheses, "expected this early in the apocalypse. And Travelus so early on was a hit. But there were many others that I expected to be around much longer, like Otto, Jake, Troy, Ophelia, Lola, and Ephraim. They all contributed to the forward motion of the story, but I expected more." And I mean, there's definitely a couple, like, you know, like Ophelia definitely, I think, should have continued forward. It just seemed like she was taken out with kind of not much going, you know, almost in a whimper, you know. It was like, we got to see some cool things from her, but then it was just like, okay, bye, you're gone, you know. Lola, I think probably I could have seen go a little bit further, but then to kind of play with Daniel's character, it's just like she kind of already had the the mark of death on her.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, he lost his daughter and then his essentially surrogate daughter right after.
And I did you see, there was a note on her that he found. I didn't see what that said. I
have
to go back.
Noticed the note, but I did not see what it said.
Did you see it, Laura?
I didn't stop to, I couldn't pause it to see what it said either.
Yeah, I think it went by really fast, so I don't know.
Yeah, listeners, don't know, let us know.
Yeah, definitely. If you do, I haven't heard anything from anywhere else about it. So
it was a, man, they decimated the season. They not only killed those main characters who they had spent an entire season creating, but they decimated the entire ranch and nation. And the only two survivors were Walker and Crazy Dog, which I didn't expect. Well, maybe one of them, but I didn't expect them both to walk away from this season.
Yeah. It's you're right. Of the two, there were only two, the former residences of the, you know, residents of the reservation, and none from the ranch survived. That's kind of funny. And, you know, I thought that Jake and Troy were going to, you know, survive the show and, you know, continue in the season four. So to see them both die, I was pretty surprised.
Yeah, you know, I definitely thought Troy was moving forward. They'd put so much, they'd invested so much into his character, and then he was just becoming good pals with Nick. I thought for sure they were going to roll him into season four.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess, I don't know if we'll get into it later though, but like, definitely this episode and this ending, you know, the series or the, you know, finale, like, it blew everything up. So the new showrunners kind of have a lot of, you know, that's the thing. We did see Troy die. So that would be a hard one to make him come back. Like, he somehow survived that.
Yeah, he's gone.
Yeah, obviously he's gone as much as Travis is gone.
Yeah, I kind of giggled at people who thought Travis would come back as an infected or something. Because, like, really? He fell from, like, 5,000 feet. I don't think he's even in pieces that can come back.
Or at least enough of a brain that's going to be intact for the virus to be able to do anything with. Yeah, it's kind of, he went splat. That's it.
Okay, so Cutter continues. He says, "And I expected more from the ranch, especially once the tribe joined with them. In the end, it was a bit weak that they were essentially wiped out by the horde without more of a fight. I feel like the writers were making a political statement with the preppers in general and focused way more on their division than their unity in survival." And yeah, I agree with that. I think there's a lot more that can be said about preppers. And, you know, this group was a group of very dysfunctional preppers who weren't actually very good at prepping. So they, you know, the thing that they had was that they were, you know, isolated and had some reserves, but, you know, but even that stuff seemed to be gone by the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They were, I guess, I don't know, isolationists. They just wanted to be left alone out in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, they had the resources that they needed at the time, but yeah, they definitely were not ready for what happens when you have to start making your own resources, or like, what are you going to do with your cattle that needs 5 gallons of water today? You know, like, you guys didn't really have the plan. You know, I guess that's why Otto was kind of the leader.
I think they needed to watch more than just Teotwaki. I think they needed to watch Doomsday Preppers well, okay, that's kind of sensational, but I think, I don't know. I tend to think that there are better organized preppers out there, and we may see them, we may not at this point.
Let's not forget, they weren't just preppers. Otto was a bit of a con man and a, like, late show infomercial dude, you know, selling his buckets.
Pocket constitution?
Yeah, and buying in, you know, into this ranch, you know, so... Yeah, he may have had things prepped to a degree, but I think it was a little bit of his con as well.
No, I totally agree with that. It had all those elements of the, you know, as seen on TV, and, you know, you also got to buy the little books and the, you know, the whatever, the ration or whatever the thing he was, but you also got your pocket constitution.
And we cannot forget about the pocket constitution, because that always comes handy.
The fling it walkers.
Yeah.
Yep. Made out of strong aluminum. Go on.
All right. Well, Cutter continues on as I look forward to seeing where the new showrunners take us, but I'm really looking forward to season 8 of The Walking Dead much more. Yeah, I think we all are. Although this season definitely was fun and I enjoyed it, because especially how it did surprise us a lot of times, but that's, you know, leading, like, it gave us something to watch and like talk about and do. And now it's like, oh, hey, you know, here comes The Walking Dead next week. Excited about that. And then he goes on to, like, he says, final notes on Ophelia. I feel like she was the Fear the Walking Dead version of Beth. Beth had a lot of potential and got little screen time or script till the very end of her run. And that final run was great and heartbreaking. Ophelia's story was a lot of the same, so much potential, just not enough screen or script time, and snuffed out just when she might have come into her own.
I can see that.
Yeah, and Dieta responded, and she said, I agree. It was too soon, especially after she had been with Walker and the tribe. I would have loved to see her live to fight another day. Well, unfortunately, Ophelia, your time is up.
I would say she did have... Aww. Wah, wah. I did say, I was going to say she did have the most heartbreaking death on the show for me to date on this series. I haven't really felt bad about anyone else. I wasn't a big Travis fan. Ophelia's death was a little heartbreaking for me.
I became more of a Travis fan like at the end of last season. And, you know, I absolutely loved his, him in that first episode. You know, I was so shocked to have him dead, but I don't know if you remember, but I got spoiled to his death, because I had all sorts of satellite trouble that night, and when the signal finally came back, it was Cliff Curtis talking about how great it was to be on the show.
Like, wah, wah. So
I knew that he died, but yeah, he was, not about Cliff Curtis, but Ophelia, I agree with what Cutter said. I think that, she was very Beth-like, and I really didn't understand why they didn't do more with her character. They seem to like taking her away. And, you know, we saw a lot of the same in like the second half of the season with Luciana. Mm. And I really don't know what they're going to do. Like, I don't know. Is she going to be back on the show, or is she done? I saw an interview with her. I don't know when it actually was published, but it talked about, you know, it was Danae Garcia, and was talking about her, and, you know, you could tell that she really wasn't involved at all in the second half of the season. And, you know, when she was asked about it, she said something like, you know, oh, I can't comment on that. So, I don't know if she'll be back. What do you guys think? Do you think she'll be back, or you think she's done?
I think she's done, because I feel like they've blown everything to smithereens, and now they're just going to go and move to wherever. You know, like, there's like, yeah, you have your family together, but like, it's almost kind of like, there's no need for them to be there anymore. Like, they don't really serve any more purpose. And so, like, for story wise, it's like, yeah, that was it. We'll just never see them again.
I think if they stay typically Walking Dead formulaic, then she will show up again at some point. But if they don't, which I like about this show, is that they don't do things formulaically, then she'll have just disappeared and we never hear from her again, which I think would be more realistic for the apocalypse. I mean, there's very little forms of communication or even meeting up with other humans. So I mean, she was fine. I wasn't overly excited about her character, so I really haven't missed her in her absence.
I think that if we, you know, the tip is if you see any casting news about her joining a new show, she's not coming back. But if we don't see anything, there's the possibility there. I mean, we'll see. And, you know, with the new showrunners, you know, and Gimple being involved, they could bring her back or maybe they won't. I mean, it could go either way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
True.
It like I said last week, it's kind of funny with her because, you know, she wasn't part of the main credits, you know, like a main role last season, although, you know, certainly in the second half, she was, you know, pretty much a main character. So they make her a main character this season and they hardly use her. It's really, really funny. All right. Well, we should move on. PB and Zane, Junie. Yeah, I didn't say that right. PB and Zane, Judy. I think I said Junie. Judy, she says, okay, really weird opening to Sleigh Ride, but I giggled at Madison in an apron. Jeez, I finally get on board and the season is over. Yeah, I know Judy was behind pretty much the whole half season until like near the end, like last week. She says, oh, well, so remind me, how old is Alicia? Like 17? I'm going to answer this right now. She's 18. I find it difficult to believe that she is so knowledgeable. Not sure that is the right word. She's a nurse. She can drive a boat. She can kill anything. Talk a guy through a back surgery. A little too crazy. Oh, Madison said the F word. Yeah, we didn't talk about that. We got another F bomb this week. And actually, you know, in a related episode or related thing, you know where we got it, the first two F-bombs? On Star Trek.
Yeah, I saw it. I heard that. I haven't seen it yet, but
yeah, it was kind of funny. Never heard it in Star Trek ever in the
ever. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I enjoyed why I guess she enjoyed the F word. why did they shoot Daniel? Strand is always messing up. Shoot him. Proctor John says they are going to Houston. Ah, there is the right place for the crossover. I think I'll skip Christmas dinner this year. Yuck. what was all with all that blood, too?
Yeah.
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah. I know my feedback is all over the place. That's okay. We're all over the place, too. I needed to type it as I thought it. Sorry, guys. Anyway, they were quite good episodes for one who doesn't want to watch anymore. LOL. Yeah, she's been kind of struggling with this show. But thank you, Judy. All right.
All right.
You want to move on to Dieta?
Yes, Dieta says, let's see, where to begin? Strand is a low-down scoundrel. What kind of deal was he trying to make and why? Didn't Madison clear him of the debt he owed already? And why does Strand continue to put his foot in doggy-do and then want everybody else to wipe him clean? He sold out the dam, got Lola and Ephraim killed, and for what? I am totally clueless as to what the point was to this except to advance the storyline away from the dam.
Yeah, you could ask that question. What was the point?
Well, I mean, that's, yeah. And here's, I guess, another kind of instance of not really understanding what Strand's intentions were. Was he trying to just save his own skin? Was he trying to save Madison and all them and the damn people because he knew the inevitable was happening? you know, and so he had to do something. But
I tend to think that maybe he thought that Proctor John would come in, you know, clean house and leave him as, you know, the de facto ruler of the dam. And, you know, Strand could, you know, live like Strand wants to live. Other than that, I don't really know what his intentions were, because it did seem rather. I mean, the only thing I could say is if they were coming anyway, I guess I could see him doing that. But at the same time, you know, I mean, why has he got to do it in secret? You know.
Yeah. Why does he need, you know, need to stay? He could have just skipped out and just let them all deal with it, you know. When you think about though how his character just in the last two episodes, you know, he gets all, you know, like just mad at Madison and following her and then things just not going right. You know, in the deal, because you can see that he's very annoyed and very kind of pissed off with Madison to, like, you know, walking up to Proctor with some idea to, like, kind of going back to her. Now he's like, I don't know, like something must have happened, or maybe I missed it. That then it's like, okay, now his whole plan is blowing up in his face, and now he's running back to Madison, you know, be like, oh, no, here, let's figure something out, or I'll, yeah, you know, because. He was a mess. He was all over the place.
He was definitely a mess.
All right. Well, Dieta continues with, she says, the next is, of course, Alicia, who is a jack of all trades. Alicia's skill set has come a long way, and she has a particular set of skills she has acquired over a very long apocalypse. Skills that make her a nightmare for people in the apocalypse, in my Liam Neeson voice.
Yeah, I almost pulled a Liam Neeson clip for that. She continues, she says, Daniel's character was one of my favorites to watch, but I don't know now. He has turned into an I will torture the truth out of you. So now his special skill set is that he can detect when someone is lying or telling the truth. I understand you being upset about losing your daughter, but this is the apocalypse. No one's life is guaranteed. Yes, Madison said she was at the ranch alive, but it got overrun by the dead. She got bitten and died. It's not good enough for Daniel. He needs to know the who and why it happened. Madison was not there. She only knows what she was told. So Daniel corners Nick to force a confession by thwarting him with torture. Or actually, I guess that might be threatening him with torture. Nick convinces him that it wasn't Troy to save his ass. But not for long, because Madison finally puts down Troy like a crazy dog he was. Ah, crazy dog. That's a good one. One whack hammer to the head. Yeah. That's worth saying. Daniel asserts that someone has to lead the flock, you know, the group to, you know, the place. And I don't think that's really true. I mean, it doesn't have to be someone leading them there. It can just be sounds. You know, like inadvertent sounds that, lead the group, you know, leads the horde to, you know, wherever. Like, you know, the example I can think of right off the top of my head was Carl firing the gun, you know, at the farm in season two. And that triggered them to come.
Well, so
that wasn't intentional.
No, that wasn't intentional, but I think I just thought of it though, is like in season one, like he lured all those infected from that stadium to the military base so that they would overrun it and basically used it as a weapon. So maybe that's where he's coming from. Not that that was ever really given to us to, you know, kind of explain that, because that's been a long time. So maybe that's on based on his information that he thinks already that, like, oh yeah, I led a bunch of them to go do some damage for, you know, whatever. So maybe that's what it's, you know, he's coming from.
So, you know, someone's got to be Pied Piper.
Yeah.
So, so he thinks, and rightly so, that Troy was the Pied Piper. So he's right. But, you know, I don't necessarily think that that's 100% correct.
Oh, no. I mean, because, you know, they are, you know, we've seen parts of during this, you know, the episode and the seasons or whatever, you know, where it's like they, you know, do react to, you know, the sounds and all that kind of stuff. You know, as much as the ranch liked to have, you know, had those big gun battles, and like they seem to make a lot of noise, you know, time to time. So, you know, it's definitely not to say that that wouldn't have happened on its own. But I think for what Daniel and what his thought process maybe is, like, that's what he's going off of. So he's looking for someone that, to him, I would think that that's all he knows. So he thinks someone has to drive them there. Like, that was intentional.
Yeah. The another example is the truck horn in season 6.
Yeah.
Which I love that, by the way.
And that caused a lot of damage.
Sure did. All right. We've got one more paragraph for her. So go ahead.
So I guess Proctor John is the Negan of Fear the Walking Dead. LOL. Yes, I agree with PB and Zane. How do you get up after back surgery and start walking around barking out orders? So unbelievable. And then he just walks away from the collapsing bridge. Guess we will see him next season. Daniel has 9 lives shot in the face, but lives to torture truths out of people another day.
It's kind of funny. Daniel has burns on one side of his face. And, you know, he's got burns on the the back of his neck, and now he's got gunshot wounds on the other side of his face, like I think kind of 180 degrees the other side
of just scars, or he's gonna look, he'll be back, but they better make him look just like really disgusting.
Yeah, and how does Daniel drink now? Is it going to dribble out the hole in his neck?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, I think he might need that the surgeon with the misunderstanding to help him out. Exactly. What kind of misunderstanding did he have? Sound like not a very good misunderstanding.
No, and he's not supposed to have that misunderstanding with Diane, because she's really good with a pickaxe.
Yep. Was there any other part of things Dieta said that you wanted to comment on, or should we move on?
No, she was very thorough. No. Could I read our friend Mark Kirkman, though?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Hi, Mark Kirkman. Friend Mark Kirkman from our group. This was an amazing double feature for a season finale. Daniel getting shot in the chin, Strand pulling another con that backfires on him, Nick playing the devil's advocate in the end, leaving us to think that Alicia was going to Houston with the Proctor in his boat for a possible crossover to The Walking Dead. So much going on. This is probably one of my top 3 so far in the series for Fear the Walking Dead.
This is probably a good time to talk more crossover, because there's been a few people that have mentioned Houston. So do you think this is all leading to the possibility of, like, Abraham somehow teaming up with this group? And maybe, you know, doing a season or something like that on this show.
Like, it almost feels like that, because even I think Erickson, I saw something online through one of my little Google alerts, but like he says that the whole Houston thing was completely by coincidence. Like, that was already there, and it had nothing to really do with, like, any ideas about this. So he could be lying. He could be just saying original thought, whatever. So I kind of don't want to take it on face value, just like to just take it. It's like it's a coincidence. And so maybe that's going to work out in AMC's favor, just to be like, hey, we can totally do this kind of thing. And the character, I just totally went for a blank. Abe's character, I should know this.
Abraham?
Yeah, but the actor.
Oh, Michael Cudlitz.
Michael Cudlitz.
Yeah, but he was tweeting kind of little vague things about this. So it looks like that's the more possible thing that's going to happen. And it would make sense on an AMC kind of idea because he's already dead and it's still early and his character was in that vicinity or not area.
One question I would want to know is, you know, how does the meeting with Eugene fit into all this? And, you know, also see him with his, you know, wife or ex-wife and the kids and, you know, their reaction to him. Was this before that happened or after? And, you know, I don't know. I mean, still, I gave my prediction last week, but I think it's Negraham. So what I mean by that is I think it could be Abraham, but I still think Negan fits better. Although I must say I haven't said this on the podcast yet. I have said this on the Facebook group. The idea is that Negan was according to the comic and the backstory that is out there now, Negan was a gym teacher. Well, what about the fact maybe he was a gym teacher at Madison and Travis's high school? And, you know, if that's the case, they could definitely do some backstory on Negan and, you know, maybe on his way to, meet up with the Saviors, he runs back into Madison, maybe on the way to, you know, if they're going to Houston or even if they aren't, you know, because we don't know where Negan was on the TV show prior. And I don't think he ever has ever said on the TV show. Now, I'm saying that because when you think of Rick in the comic book, yes, they end up in Atlanta, but he was a sheriff in Kentucky, in Cynthiana, Kentucky. Okay, which I believe is Kirkman's Robert Kirkman, his hometown, I think. But the big point there is that Rick was from Kentucky in the comic book, and they changed him to make him from Kings County, a fictional county in Georgia. So, I mean, even if it's written in the comic book that Negan's from Virginia, which, you know, one person on the Facebook group was when I brought up this whole point and, you know, made me think that the possibility of Negan is that much more out there. One of her members strongly disagreed. And, you know, that's to each his own. But my point being that it wouldn't be the first time that they change story if that's the case. And, you know, high school teachers, I don't think it would be a stretch if we find out Negan's, you know, was out in LA. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the thing. There are so many things that they could do. I mean, I've heard a lot of different things online not necessarily like a Walking Dead character come on to the Fear show, and it could be vice versa to where it's like even this coming season that Madison shows up because she's been with the Saviors. And then, you know, so she's part of that group and it's like, okay, well that would lead to where the show Fear then has like kind of some kind of future end game, which I thought, well, that's kind of really pushing it. But then I was also like Crazy Dog and Walker. You know, they do say they're going north, and then where's north, you know, or do they end up just showing up at Alexandria or, you know, like whatever. So that could be something, you know, that they could do to not necessarily like going to, you know, Walking Dead to Fear, but it could be Fear going to Walking Dead.
Or maybe the crossover doesn't involve either show. Maybe there's a character from like another show, like Walter White or
something. Yeah, like
something like that, you know. That would be an extreme crossover.
Yeah.
I mean, they do it in the DC universe, right? Mm-hmm. They have all these characters go from one show to the other.
Yeah, I'll go on the record as saying I'm not down for this crossover because I feel that the shows are so tonally different that it would be weird for a very over-the-top cartoonish kind of character like Abraham or Eugene to show up on The Walking Dead, which has these very real kind of gritty characters. But yeah. I think now that The Walking Dead producers have their hands on both of the series, that the tone of Fear the Walking Dead is going to be changing. And I think the crossover event is what's going to lead to that change, to my dismay, unfortunately. But, you know, I'm going to try to stay optimistic that it will be good. But I just feel like someone like Abraham, who's such a sort of, he is a caricature almost, to show up would feel so tonally different from how the show is now.
Yeah.
The tone of The Walking Dead and the tone of Fear the Walking Dead, and to be like having this kind of connection, like, and the new showrunners, I mean, they could be all like, oh yeah, I don't know, let's go back to what we kind of already know and not try new things or try different stories or ideas. And then it turns into, oh, maybe they move into the forests of, you know, like, well, back into trees and forests and like just blues and grays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it'll be like a Walking Dead Miami, or you know, CSI has the Walking Dead, yeah. CSI Las Vegas, CSI Miami. It'll just be CSI, but in a new location. It'll be Walking Dead, but in a new location.
Yeah.
They'll just keep moving around. You know, they'll be like Walking Dead Wyoming. Yeah. All right. Well,
I'm waiting for Walking Dead Colorado. I mean, heck, we have mountains, we have snow. Those walkers don't stand a chance.
Yep.
There you go. Rocky Mountain Dead.
Yes.
Hey, there you go. There's your new show title.
All right. That's it for our feedback this week. So I think we basically left for assorted comments and you know, anything that we want to say about the season in general. I think at this point we've been going quite a bit, so I don't want to go for too much longer, but what do you have, anything additional to bring up? Laura, I'll start with you.
Sure. I have a lot, so if I get too verbose, just cut me off, you know. get the little hook and pull me off the stage. So just to expand on some of my hot points of the awesome sauce was the new developments, and that was in involving that The Walking Dead has not expanded on the mythos of the walkers probably since season 3, when we learned about Michonne's pet walkers, that you could cut off their mouths and jaws and walk them around to basically use as camouflage. But I thought with this new adrenaline drug that they were showing at the beginning, the Locos Coeruleus, I think, we have a new dynamic to add to the aspect of the walkers. So the season in general used walkers sparingly, and I loved it. You know, there it wasn't like you had to have walker kill of the episode every single time. It was just, you know, where we feel we need to have walkers, we have them, and where we don't, we focus on the drama. But I do like that they had this new aspect of walkers, and I hope that they pull that into the next season, because they said that the Proctors would take that drug and they could fight stronger, longer, and harder without having to sleep or rest or something like that. Yeah. I thought that was pretty cool, mm-hmm. to add that new twist into the mythos of The Walking Dead.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny that, you know, if they're a little too ripe, might not be a good idea. But I think,
or you know, if they were too old, because you getting infected.
That's what I mean. Like, you know, if they're too dead, then obviously it's not good. But the thing I would say there is, like, I think I've heard this before, like from a medical perspective, that, you know, the brainstem has all the, you know, the norepinephrine and all of that. So it's definitely, you know, a center for adrenaline. So, and I know adrenaline is epinephrine, and then, you know, so it's those two drugs, epinephrine and norepinephrine. But anyway, yeah, it just, I don't know. Could we see drug dealers that start, you know, dealing the drug of zombie brain stems?
I mean, you know what I actually think, though, that really is kind of now fascinating is that, you know, before you look at an infected or a walker and you're just like, you kill it. But now it does introduce this thing. No, you actually can use them for something, you know, like they're useful now. And that changes a lot of kind of how you would look at the infected. Start harvesting them as a resource to some degree.
Right. That's what Nick was doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the first time we've ever seen anything like that.
Yeah, I loved it. Plus, I liked how he chopped the heads like a cantaloupe.
All right, you got more here, so keep going.
The unexpected turn of events in the episode, just totally unpredictable. You know, I don't want to get hate for this, but I feel like The Walking Dead has gotten a little bit formulaic. I haven't been surprised really by a death since... Well, actually, I was surprised by Dr. Denise's death, but a lot of times they kind of project the deaths, and so I kind of have it... I haven't been surprised in a while, and I just loved some of the surprises in this episode. Like Diane getting her leg broken. I mean, we just got introduced to this character, and I was so surprised that they immediately disabled her. I'm sure she's going to be back, but I thought that was just really surprising. I didn't expect that. Madison killing Troy. I have a caveat here because in the trailer, we see her standing there with the ball peen hammer in that enclosed space. And then the minute I saw her in the enclosed space with Troy, and then I saw her holding that ball peen hammer, I kind of knew where it was leading to. So I have come to the mind that I am going to stop watching trailers because they just ruin it. They ruin it for me. But Lola and Ephraim's death was a surprise. Like I said, I thought they were going to take some of those characters on into the next season, but no, it's like bang, bang, and they were gone. And Walker and Crazy Dog's sniper ex machina. I totally didn't expect that. I mean, yeah, it's a last minute save, but it's not like we haven't had a lot of those on the main show. And I was totally not expecting that. So that was awesome. Madison's F-bomb was pretty cool. I like how they just sort of slide it in there. And really, it doesn't stand out. But then you're like, what? What'd she just say? And then Daniel's survival and escape was cool. Like, I just love how he... Yeah, it was acting like he was injured, and he came up to those guys and went, just took him out like nothing. Daniel is stone cold, man. He does not mince words. He does not monologue. He's just like, you're down, you're down, you're down. That was pretty cool. And Alicia and Strand actually getting sucked into the flood. When they had that, I thought, oh, yeah, they're our protagonists. They're going to get away. And no, they got sucked into the flood, and we have no idea what happened to them.
Yeah, and we don't know, like, did they all survive? Like, we see Madison survive, but we don't know about Alicia.
Or Strand, yeah.
Or Nick, for that matter. Or
Daniel, or Daniel. Like, pretty much everybody that we saw at least walking and standing upright.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only three that we know survived were Madison, you know, Kalataka and Crazy Dog.
Yeah.
Right. You know? Yeah.
Which I kind of expected at least one of those two, probably Crazy Dog. I expected him to die. So I was glad to see he didn't die.
Yeah.
Because I thought his character, you know, they haven't done too much with him, but I think his character also has some potential.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's obviously got skills.
Yeah, definitely. You know, he's a sniper. So,
the deaths, especially Troy's death, I didn't want it to happen so soon. I thought it'd be a good character to bring into season four, but I thought how they did it was totally perfect. I know I'm contradicting what you said, Kyle, but I thought that was a tricky death to handle because, like, he is such a polarizing character. Half the people, like, hate him, and half the people just love his character. Maybe don't love him, but love his character, because I see the Facebooks, I see the Twitters. There were a lot of people who were upset that he got killed off. So I don't think people wanted him to get a redemption story, but I think the way they handled it, even though I loved his character, I thought he went out appropriately as he should. Madison, I thought, had to be the one to kill him because I knew it would be because he took away the thing that she told Strand she wanted the most, which was the ranch. And I think all the times that she gave him a pass made us believe that she'd never kill him. And that's why her killing him was so unexpected. You know, you thought she was going to give him another path, and then it was like, whack! You know, she just got primal and just took him out like just some wild animal who saw its prey. So it was a brutal death, and there was no drama, no soundtrack. It was just stark, and he was down. So that was an unexpected death for me. Well, except for that little giveaway from the trailer. And Lola and Ephraim were unexpected. They built up a lot of the characters to be kind of precious. Like, they gave them a lot of storyline and the development. I was just so surprised that they were not afraid to kill them off, which is what I really liked. So that was the unexpected deaths.
I guess maybe part of my feelings were just, I guess I had a little more, like, I wanted more hope with our main cast, you know, like with Madison and the kids, you know, being able to, like, get through it. It was just like, I felt like, you know, Troy was definitely a danger and Madison knew it and she kind of played with fire. But then at some point, especially whenever she takes him out to exile him, and then he totally, like, kills that other guy that's with them, and then she's still, like, standing there, just like,
he didn't kill him. He didn't kill him. He just knocked him out. Because Claw is in the finale. He was in Brother's Keeper. He got killed by walkers.
Oh.
A lot of people think that he killed him, but he just knocked him out.
Oh, I thought, because right. I know, yeah. He put his hand, you know, he drove his hand through the knife, and
yeah, he stabbed him in the shoulder, but he just, when he was beating him, he knocked him out.
Okay, well, I mean, that's, well, I guess, did Madison know that at the time, though? I don't know.
Maybe,
I mean, that might have been.
She said no more killing, and then he dropped the knife when he was about to stab him.
Okay, well, I mean, that's probably what I remember then, was just like, I just assumed he just killed him, and then Madison was like, stop it, and then, you know, she had the moment there to, like, take care of the problem that everybody knew he was. But, I mean, I don't know, you know, there's a at least for me, and maybe because I didn't catch it, or that's just not how I was, like, perceiving the episode at the time. It's just, I felt like he was given so many chances, but I just didn't feel like, what worth does he have to Madison or the group, or, like, you know, I don't know. It just seemed, she's kind of that character in my mind that is very, like, you know, you're threatening me and my family, and, like, I'm going to take care of you, you know, and get rid of you. But missed, I guess, whatever, maybe some little elements of that. And so I just kind of took off, like, get rid of him.
Yeah. And I think they could have made that clearer. But I think the one thing that I thought is when Troy said to her, you let your son kill him, she realized that, that Troy knew that Nick had killed his father. And she realized that he still did not, when he found that out, he still didn't kill Nick. So maybe that was, like, the tiny bit of mercy she was showing him for not killing Nick.
Yeah, the funny thing, you know, that conversation they had, which I referred to in my rating, when, you know, I'm right with it, and, you know, are we good and all this stuff, and the way that they were talking, there was something that there was one piece of the exchange that made me think that they were referring to the fact that they had sex or something. And, you know, I think part of that is that whole strange, you know, sexual tension that we have alluded to, you know, pretty much the entire season between those two, you know, and you know, that all emanates from Troy, you know. You know, I love you, Mommy. Oh, I love you, Mommy.
Yeah, and it's not like Madison wasn't playing it up, man. That time she put the napkin on his lap and everything, I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Mrs. Robinson, what's going on? Yeah. I mean, I'm sure she was just trying to be manipulative, but yeah, it was strange. And I think it's funny that the actors never confirm or deny anything. Whenever they're asked about it, they're just like, I don't know.
Yeah, I was waiting like all season, and I'm kind of like miffed at this point, because I was waiting for Daniel Sharman to appear on Fear, or on Talking Dead, and he never did, you know, other than in the segments. And yeah, for that matter, where is Frank Delane? How come he still hasn't been on? I mean, I know he got arrested at the studios. Is it really still kind of keeping him off the show?
You know, I think some actors, they don't like discussing their characters. I think Andrew Lincoln's a little bit the same, too. He'll show up on some special episodes of Talking Dead, but a lot of actors don't like to overly discuss their characters. They like to just get into the character and then let the audience kind of develop their own impression of what they did and who they are.
And, you know, I think Andrew Lincoln has the right to, you know, like, I know he's selective as well when it comes to, you know, conventions and stuff. You know, he only does a couple of Walker Stalker cons, and, you know, he does the London one and the Atlanta one. I think that's it. And, you know, he'll do the big, you know, New York and San Diego. Yeah, but other than that, he doesn't go. And, you know, I think in considering his stature on the show, I think, you know, I don't have a problem with that, because, you know, he's out there otherwise. He doesn't do social media, but I mean, he does do interviews and stuff, so it's not like he's, you know, completely aloof. But Frank Delane, he's the one that, like, I know Jason on Walking Dead cast has talked about, you know, being able to interview him, and the fact that there's like no contact he can find for him. So I don't know. I would love to see. I would love to see Daniel Sharman, for that matter, interviewed about the about his character too.
Me too. I think he did a brilliant job. I thought he created a very rich and complex character with Troy.
Yeah. Yeah, I am
crazy,
very,
but complex.
I am very sad to see him go, because he definitely added an element to the show that was very positive. I mean, he wasn't a likable character, but he was just such an oddball, and, you know, this like evil guy that they still wanted around. And, you know, it just, I'm going to miss the guy. I really will.
Yeah, I've seen people like, I'm going to miss that little psycho.
He is our little Mangala, you know.
But I don't want to usurp too much, but I did want to mention that I loved the classic horror from the dream sequences, because I am a big horror buff. From a young age, I've been watching scary movies, so I just loved the horror, like the total horror tropes, the lifting up the cover on the platter to reveal Jeremiah's head, and all the blood just gushing down the table, and Madison in that Carrie White moment, you know, from the movie Carrie, when Jeremiah's hand comes up from the grave and grabs her down into it. I was like screaming, yes, yes. It was so awesome. I love scary movies, and that's the reason I started watching The Walking Dead, because it was about zombies and it was going to be scary, and I'm like, I love horror. So I started watching it, and you know, lately it's kind of been easing off the horror and getting more into like these groups versus groups battles and everything, which is fine. But I love that they had this pure element of horror in these dream sequences. I totally loved it.
I think it's worth asking the question. Unquestionably, I would say best fear season ever. Better than season 7 of The Walking Dead? What do you think, Laura?
Yes.
Kyle?
Yes.
It is unanimous.
What?
It is true. I think as surprised as I am to say it after, you know, last season of Fear, because, you know, Ruthie decided she wasn't going to cover this show this season. And, you know, I thought that the last two episodes were enough for me to keep going. That and the fact that I'm a completionist. but I was really on the fence. You know, I wasn't sure if I was going to keep going with this show. And I am so glad that I did. And, you know, is it also worth saying, is this the best Walking Dead universe finale ever?
Yes.
I kind of in between. And it means I don't really have an answer because I'm not really sure.
I think probably the best finale was A from season 4, you know, and the ending, you know.
That, I would say that was my second for sure.
Yeah. But certainly I would say that this is right up there. I mean, it was, you know, they really didn't hold any punches. I mean, they, you know, this talk about, I see that you had this in the notes, but talk about a clean slate. You know, I mean, whatever they decide to do for season 4, it's going to be completely different. You know, they may stay around the border, but it's definitely going to be a different story going forward. So, I am looking forward to it. I hope, you know, we're not going to be, you know, waiting like a year and a half or, you know, something, because that seems to be the tendency these days for new seasons of shows. And you seem to be, yeah, more than a year, you know, to come out. So I hope we're not going to be waiting that long, but you know, with new showrunners, who knows? We'll see.
I love the fact that this world and this show has nothing, like has no comic, has no anything that is going to dictate like where the story's going. We don't know. We've never had a character, Madison and like Nick and, you know, Alicia. Like there's no comic book that's already been telling the story for like years and years and years. And that's one of the things that drew me to Fear. It's just like, they can do anything and I'm not going to have any way to know because there's no book already out there with it all.
Yeah. One thing that is the element of surprise, you know, like no one knows what is going to come, and anything could really come out of this show. And, you know, compared to The Walking Dead and, you know, Game of Thrones as well, I guess, although it's kind of right now they've got nothing to dictate what's going on. It does, you know, like the death of Travis there. I mean, I was so shocked when it happened and so pissed off that I got, you know, spoiled by no one, which is even worse.
Technical
difficulties spoiled it for me. Okay, well, I wanna wrap it up, but Laura, since we have you, I wanted to ask you, because you know, next week we have a show coming back. What are your thoughts about season 8 for Walking Dead?
Oh my gosh. Well,
in 30 words or less,
I think I'd like to just see some of our B-list characters get bumped up A-list and get a little bit more depth and storyline from them. Like, I love Aaron and Jesus and King Ezekiel and Jerry. I just would like to see more from them. Maybe have some of our main cast step back a little so that we could get more storyline from them. But, you know, still feature them, obviously. And, you know, no more Negan. Kill him. Because I find him annoying. But, yeah, that's my hope.
You find him annoying? Yeah.
Please lean backwards as you say that.
Are you kidding me?
Negan is not abused.
I might change my opinion. We'll see how the season goes with Negan.
Yeah, I mean, I was at a point there, I know, after episode 4 last season, I just absolutely hated the guy. And I came to love to hate the guy. You know, he does make me, you know, chuckle sometimes, you know, when he says things like, you know, tickle my balls and some of the things that he said. And, you know, maybe we'll actually get to hear some of those F-bombs. Some of the cussing.
Yeah, some of the language, because that's what he's known for in the comic. And that's what kind of makes him so, yeah, Negan.
Yeah. To what you said, Laura, I hope that as some of those characters, you know, get some good screen time, I hope that doesn't end up being followed, you know, an episode or two later by them getting killed off. Because that whole formula, I think one of you said it was very much getting old, and I don't want to see things be so predictable, but I will say this: there is one thing that I want to be able to predict, and that is the trash people dying horribly.
Can they get a nuclear bomb dropped on them?
Please. They are also so annoying.
Oh yeah. I mean, the only thing that I could say good about them was the ability to, I can't even find it. The ability to play this when Rick fought Winslow. The good old Star Trek fight theme, which.
Oh. Well, if that were the case, then Rick should have got his shirt torn off. Why can't Rick get his shirt torn off?
Well, you know, the thing that, that's true, like Captain Kirk did. All right. So to submit your feedback for, and it's going to be a while before we have another episode of Fear the Walking Dead, but for The Walking Dead, you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback and submit text or audio. And on that page, there's a SpeakPipe widget you can also use. And then you can call the Golden Spiral Media voice line, which is at 304-837-2278. Make sure you mention that you're leaving feedback for the Walking Dead talk through. So most people, though, leave us feedback through our Facebook group, which is wonderful, and these two lovely people got to know us from there. You can go to facebook.com/groups/walkingdeadgsm. And the deadline for submitting feedback for the season premiere of The Walking Dead, episode 1, season 8, actually usually say that the other way around, is at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central, the Tuesday after the episode is aired, which I believe, the 24th. So you can also connect with us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is WalkingDeadGSM.
The best way you can support us is by subscribing to us in Apple Podcasts. And you can also go to goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple. And while you're there, give us a rating or review. I've gotten to do this season for, you know, Ruthie, and I've would like to hear what you guys think of my job and if the things you liked. And
we still have not got a single review the whole time Kyle was a co-host. So we could use even
if
just
not,
in general, we're kind of, it's been a while. I don't know what it is, but it's,
well, I think you've been lovely, Kyle.
Oh, thank you so much. Now go give me a review.
I've reviewed already, but I'll go in through another account and give you a review.
Thank you. Well, all right. Well, you can find out all the other ways to support us at goldenspiralmedia.com/support.
So our next episode, which will be actually as the Walking Dead talk through with Ruthie.
And I'm Ruthie.
Yeah, where you been all this time? We've heard from you one time in like 6.5 months. Anyway, she'll be back next week. Covering season 8, episode 1, which is titled Mercy. And we don't know who's written it, although I assume Scott M. Gimple has something to do with that episode. Directed by Greg Nicotero. And the description is, Rick, the Kingdom, and the Hilltop bring the fight to Negan and the Saviors. Well, that's shocking. I could have never expected that description.
I had no guess that that's what it's going to be.
I thought they were going to have a tea party.
Yeah. Laura, thanks for joining us for this finale, and thank you for all of the great feedback that you've given us over the season. It was much appreciated, and for that, I will give you yet another showcase. Don't let it get to your head.
Oh, thank you, Bob.
Yeah, Bob Barker. Yeah.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
No problem at all. Yeah, it's great to have you.
We may, if you'd love to come back, we'd love to have you at some point. So maybe we could get you and Ruthie talking together as well.
Oh, yeah. I'd love that. Ruthie and I, head to head.
And since it's going to be a while, you know, between episodes, Kyle, thank you for being a wonderful co-host this season.
Thank you. And you're welcome. It's been so much fun. So I'm glad you reached out to me. Let me take a chance.
Yeah, it has been a lot of fun. And, you know, I just have to say yay. And thank so do you. They.
Well, anyway, that's it for this episode. So until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Kyle.
And this is
Fear the Walking Dead Talk-Through.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Are you a podcaster who loves creating great content but gets overwhelmed by the audio editing process? Are you a business professional or an entrepreneur that wants to start a podcast but aren't sure where to begin? You need Pro Podcast Solutions. Pro Podcast Solutions has a robust suite of services to equip podcasters and help podcasters create better content than ever before. Visit ProPodcastSolutions.com today and find out how you can get your first episode produced for free. That's ProPodcastSolutions.com.